EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is
matched.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all doing good this week. I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. And if you enjoy this episode, please share it and leave me a ratings and review if you're able to, as it really helps the show to be more discoverable to new listeners and future guests. We have two fine gentlemen sharing their encounters tonight. We start off with Dalton in Florida, and both of Dalton's sightings took place in San Diego in the mid to late 80s. The first was a saucer-shaped craft that was witnessed for quite a while, and then a couple of years later, Dalton observed several bright lights traveling over a mountain range. Then we head over to North Ayrshire, Scotland to speak with Ian about a number of strange incidents that occurred in his childhood, involving beings abducted him late at night, lost time, balls of light, and a couple of incidents while he was serving in the Royal Navy in the 1970s in the location of the Bermuda Triangle. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Dalton, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. I'm glad to be here. I love your podcast.
And it's great to have you on, and you're calling from Florida today.
Fort Myers, to be exact.
Wonderful. Now, Dalton, you have come on to share your UFO experiences. Would you like to start at the very beginning for us, please, sir?
Sure. I'll start right now, Nick. This took my first sighting. I have had two pretty major sightings. October of 1986 is where it all began for me. But going back a little farther, a little backstory on myself is that I used to work on fighter aircraft. I've seen a lot of things that fly airplane-wise. And up until that point, I was released from the service in 75. I've never seen anything that in which I encountered in 1986. So the story starts like this. I had an employee working for me, and she wanted to go for a motorcycle ride. I'm a motorcycle enthusiast. So I agreed to pick her up on a Friday night. It was probably around 9:30, and we were going to go to a local club in San Diego. And she lived in an area called La Jolla, which is right on the coast. So I showed up on my 9:30 time limit, and I picked her up, and we were proceeding out and going east away from the water. We're going to a little area called North Park, and it's a residential area. lots of different housings and clubs and whatever. And so as we're riding out on the freeway going east, and we had about maybe a 35-minute ride, and that particular evening was very, very common that the cloud cover was very, very low. And the sheer coming off the water, sometimes the whole entire city of San Diego would have a blanket of clouds over it. And we're riding out on the freeway going east, and we had to merge onto another freeway called 805. And so we came up 805, and we went into an area where I got off the freeway and came to a area called North Park. And I came to a stop sign. And when I came to the stop sign to make a left, she was coming unglued on the back of the bike. "Look, look." And I'm looking around for traffic or whatever. She goes, "No, look up, look up." So I look up, and to my right, there was a hole in the cloud cover. It was like it's just a hole with a giant sphere of orange sitting up above the cloud cover. I could clearly see it because there was no roof over the motorcycle. It was a clear, open, you know, sight. And I didn't know what it was. And if I put my hand out to my arm's length, it was as big as a volleyball. I mean, it was quite large. So I pulled the bike across the street, and we both got off of it, and we stood there talking and looking at this thing. And it wasn't making a noise. It wasn't making a movement. There was nothing going on. It was just this big orange ball sitting in the night sky. And meanwhile, a car would come through and go on. And it wasn't like people were going, "Look, look." It was kind of this hidden because it was in that hole of the cloud cover. So we went on. We were watching this for probably five to 10 minutes. And we're talking, and we're going back and forth. And what is it? I don't know. And I was going through the process of elimination. Is it a helicopter? No. Blimp? No. Star? No. Moon? No. And then an airplane took off out of the airport called Lindbergh Field. And I said, "Well, that's an airplane right there. And what is that thing?" So we continued to watch it. And then as fast as you can blink an eye, it was almost like a kaleidoscope closing and opening. It shot straight up at a warp speed that was just unbelievable, to a point where now it was just a speck of white light in the night sky. Looking through the hole in the clouds, looking as far as I could still see a little pinhead of this white light. So thinking that it was gone or whatever, thought it was over, we decided to continue on our journey. So I went over and I started getting the motorcycle started. In those days, it was an old kickstart Harley. So I'm getting it ready to start. And I said, "I still see it. You see it?" She goes, "Yeah, I see it." And just as I got the motorcycle started, it came back to its original position, just as big as it was before it left. And I was like, "What is that thing?" So we turn the bike off. I go over, we're standing there and we're watching this. Another 5 to 8 minutes goes by. We're still talking. Nothing's changed. And all of a sudden it shuddered in a way that was different. It moved for the first time in a back and forth motion. And we both recognized it and we're talking about that. And then it slowly turned. We were looking at it at a 65 degree angle. It was up, but we were looking at the bottom of it. And when it turned, it leaned over a little bit to where you could tell that it was a big bowl shape, saucer shape. And what was amazing about it is that the very bottom of it was very orange. And as it got up towards the leading edges of it, it got cooler. You could tell the temperature was cooler because the color changed. It was more of an amber. You couldn't see the top of it, obviously, because it was up. I don't know how far away it was, but it was up there. But it was very large. And it was rotating at a counterclockwise. I could tell it was a little leading edge light that would go around in this counterclockwise circle. And now we're really coming unglued. So we're still talking. I'm going, "Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I don't believe it. I don't believe it." And she's saying the same thing. And then all of a sudden it started to, it's hard to describe this because it was shooting out like laser beams, and they were shooting out all over the top of the craft, sides, top. Some were longer than others, and it was very erratic. And it's like a, I can do it with my voice. I was like, and we both were saying, God, it's shooting out these beams of light of some type. And then from 360 degrees in every direction, we started seeing these small white star-colored balls of light. Today, I would probably call them an orb, but 1986, I had no wording for them. And they were coming in from every direction at very high speeds. But as they got near the craft, they slowed down just enough that when went through that cloud cover, you could see it illuminate the cloud cover. And they slowed down to a much lesser speed. And what we noticed was these laser beams that were shooting out were actually, in a sense, vacuuming these balls of light. So it was sucking them into the main body of the craft. And this went on for some time. And then we noticed it was almost like it was recharging them. It would release them out of the bottom where it was very orange. They would fall away very slowly, but they were like stardust. And once they reached a certain distance from the bottom of the craft, they would then take off, and they were intelligent because they were having fun. You could tell that they were circling each other and going off in groups of 3 to 10. And this kind of kept going on for about 10 minutes. And then slowly the balls stopped coming, the balls of light. And then the craft just basically stopped shooting out its laser beams. And then everything got back into its original position, and then it just shot straight up again to where you could barely see this little light, and all of a sudden it just kind of blinked out and it was gone. And then the cloud cover, we stood there for 15 minutes just our jaws touching the ground, and the cloud cover kind of all kind of came back together where the hole was now gone completely. And so in a sense, we came to the conclusion that the heat of the bottom of that craft just burnt enough of that cloud away, so we happened to be in the right position at the right time to see that. So we went on with our journey, and then I dropped her off later on that night, and I had about a 40-mile ride because I lived more out in the desert away from the beach. And all the way out, I couldn't help but think to myself, I saw you. I saw you with my own eyes. And of course, the next day I wake up and I call her. I go, we did see that, right? That we would do that periodically just to remind each other. But I forgot, I left one thing out. I did call the police department. And so the guy goes, police department. I said, yes, sir. I said, anybody report a UFO sighting over North Park tonight about 10 o'clock? And he goes, no, pal, no UFOs. Did you see something? I go, I saw something, but I'm not positive what it was. But I know it wasn't from here. I can guarantee you that. And he passed on a UFO hotline number. It was probably Art Bell's or somebody. But anyway, I called it and never got an answer. So from that point on, I became a star watcher. I thought to myself, I love to see another one. I love to see another one. And you can go out for a lifetime looking for a UFO and never see one. So 2 years goes by, and by that time I'm married and I had an infant child. And my wife worked for a restaurant. It was called the Tickled Trout. It was a British pub in Hotel Circle, San Diego. And she worked nights a lot. So I was home and I was caring for my child. And I had a lot of downtime in the evening. So I'd pop a beer, and I had a window that kind of faced out to the east. And this is going into the second sighting. So we're 2 years down the road. I have seen what I thought of were a couple little small things that went by, but nothing like this one. This one was, it took the cake of all cakes for me. So in the evening, I would sit there and look out at the desert, and because it was surrounded. I lived in a little town called Lakeside, and Lakeside is very small. It had a little rodeo arena, and it was tiny, and it was kind of Western. And it was surrounded, it was like in a bowl, and it was surrounded by very low mountains. I would say 3,000 feet at the most, and they circled kind of the whole area. Past that mountain range was going in towards Phoenix, Arizona, Yuma. Just, it was kind of like a high desert area. And so I'd watch that area night after night, and never seen anything. And then one night, everything was quiet. It was probably 3:15 in the morning a.m. My wife's asleep. Everybody's quiet. And I had to go to the restroom. So on my way out of the restroom, I stop by my little window just to take a peek. And sure enough, I look about probably 10 miles to the east, and the darkest part of the sky was a low. I'm not sure how high they would be, but they were high enough that they were, I would say, maybe 5,000, 10,000 feet up. But they were way off, 10 miles off. And what I thought was what turned into they was actually what I first saw was just one big light. It almost looked like as bright as an airplane light. So I go, wow, I have never seen that before. And so I'm sitting there. I go, I'm going to give this a look-see. And I'm watching this thing. And all of a sudden, I realized it wasn't one light. It was 10 lights. And they were perfectly behind each other. So when I first saw them, when they came in from the east, they were perfectly behind each other. But then they arced. They made an arc, almost like a roller coaster. So you got the front car coming down first, the second car, the third car, the fourth car. And it was like an inverted C. So I could see all of them kind of in an arch that would be reminiscent of a first big dip on a roller coaster. And I was just beside myself. So I sat there and I was just taking it all in when one of them, the first one, breaks away from the pack and it starts descending. The rest of them stayed in exact position in that arc. This town's completely asleep. There's no cars. There's nothing going on. And I'm watching out of my window. And I had a screen in the window, so I slid the screen back so I could get a better view. And I watched this first craft just descend lower and lower and lower, coming kind of towards me, but to my left. And then it made a left turn. And when it made a left turn, it never turned its lights off. It was as bright as a it was like spotlights. I couldn't make out the size of it, but I knew it was smaller. I would almost equate it to it as big as a Mini Cooper, but it was flat like a cigarette pack. It wasn't thick. It was kind of narrowed. And as it came towards me, I could see it get lower and lower and lower, and it was illuminating the rooftops of people's homes. Now, what I did notice was dogs. Every dog in that whole town was barking, but nothing was moving outside of me looking out the window. And then as I had my head out the window, I noticed something that I didn't see before. And over this little mountain range was a gigantic moon-colored sphere, kind of iridescent, but it was fairly large. And it was sitting up, I'm going to call that the Scout. It kind of sat up there over the little mountain range. And as this smaller craft came in and it got over the rooftops and illuminated the rooftops, it came all the way down to the ground. And then it nestled into a little creek area that was filled with cattails and such. It got so low to the ground, I could see the ground illuminated from the lights. And what it did is it dimmed the big lights all the way down to where it was just a real yellow little lamp light. But I could tell it was hovering because I could see the movement. It wasn't on the ground. It was just above the ground. Now I'm just losing it. And so I got an eye on that. I got the rest of the train sitting out in the night sky. I got the scout ship sitting over top of this little mountain range. And then a car came through. Now I'm watching all this take place. As the car came through, the smaller craft on the hovering above the ground, it dimmed its lights very dim, dimmer than before, and it actually nestled deeper back in the cattails in a hiding motion. To my surprise, the scout ship was gone. It ducked down behind the little mountain range. So as the car continued out of Lakeside and went up and caught the freeway, the scout ship slowly rose back up over just enough to get over top of the mountain range. The smaller craft still hovering, and I could see it lit up a little bit more when the car went by. And that happened over and over again for 10 times. The total amount of crafts were 10. Each one would come down in the same pattern, get lowered, lower, lower over rooftops, except they didn't hide in the same area. They hid in an area that would be 500 yards, maybe big, but they were all hiding in little places that they could nestle down deeper. And this went on for a good 15 to 20 minutes. And finally, the last one came down, And it came down the same pattern, except when it came down over the rooftops, it didn't nestle down into the creek banks and hiding in the bushes and things like that. It came down and nestled next to a gutter of a small church. So it was hovering next to the gutter, and the gutter was probably 30 feet off the ground. Like it wasn't connected to the gutter. It just hovered next to the gutter. And then it dimmed its big lights down to a very yellow kind of dim light. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm the kind of person, I'm so interested in anything in life that's something like that, that I said, I'm going to get my clothes on and I'm going to walk out there. And so I got dressed. My apartment was a three-tiered apartment on certain rows, so we were the highest up in the back. And so as I came out of my apartment, I made it down to the sidewalk. I got to the sidewalk. I could see the scout ship still hovering over the top of the mountain. What I didn't know was there was another scout ship identical to the big one over the mountains behind my apartment. But I wasn't looking back that way. I was always looking out to the east. I couldn't see that other one. So there were two scout ships. I call them scout ships because that's the only thing I know how to call them. So I thought, wow, if I get abducted, I'm ready. I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to walk up there and I'm going to focus on the one by the gutter. I'm never going to take my eyes off of it. So I fixed my eyes on the one hovering by the gutter, and about an eighth of a mile up was a gazebo in a little park. And I thought, if I can make it to the gazebo, I'll plant there and just see what happens. So as I started walking up the sidewalk, I knew that there were nine other ones hiding back in the brush and the cattails and the creeks and different things like that. And as I started walking up towards the sidewalk, I could see them dimming down just a little bit. They're kind of hiding. They knew I was there. There was no doubt in my mind. And then finally, I approached the one hanging by the gutter, and there was a parking lot in front of the church, and it was about 50 to 60 yards back in the parking lot. And as I got closer to it, I never took my eyes off of it. It started dimming. Now I'm standing right in front of where it is hanging by the gutter, and I can't see it at all. It just dimmed down to where it was invisible. So I kept my journey, and I went up to the gazebo, and I turned around, and I just got down on my knees, and I just watched what was going on. I could see the one by the gutter re-illuminate. They were all illuminated, and they were all kind of just hovering, just in their positions. And when a car would come through, they would dim down and hide. And when a car would go by, they would come back and illuminate to the original position. And then finally, daylight started coming. And as daylight came on, they got dimmer. By 6 o'clock, 6 a.m., 5:30, 6 o'clock, I couldn't see them anymore. The lighter it got outside, the dimmer they got, to the point where they were no longer visible at all. So I thought, wow, okay. I'm going to make my way back to my apartment, and I'm trying to explain to my wife where I've been. So I make my way back to the apartment, and my head's just full of wow, 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 wow. And over across Route 8, which is the freeway, there's a gigantic ravine, and I look over, and I see the two scout ships. They were across the freeway, probably about a half a mile away, and one was following the other one, and they were floating, I wouldn't say 30 feet above the ground, and their color changed from that moon color. They reminded me so much of the bubble that the Good Witch floated in on the Wizard of Oz, kind of fluidy looking, fairly large, but really, you just had to know what you're looking at, and the cars were going by like nothing ever happened. And I watched them just disappear down the ravine. I went into my house, got a cup of coffee, and tried to tell my wife what was going on, and she thought I was out of my mind. But so basically, Nick, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Obviously, the whole area now, the Lakeview's all probably changed quite considerably in the last few years. So I'll probably send you a little map to see if you can maybe pinpoint where this happened. So I'm looking at the map now, and I'm guessing it's kind of over from Lake Jennings.
Yep, it's called Lakeside, and Lake Jennings was there. I used to fish that lake, and Route 8 runs right along up the hill a little bit from it. And it's probably changed a lot since 1988, but You know, that eastern part of the country out there was just kind of a manzanita. It was horse country. They had Poway, Lakeside, and then it gets up into Rancho Bernardo and Escondido. But it's out in that fringe. And
from that ravine. Yeah, I can see. Yeah. I can see the ravine. Yeah, wonderful. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
So when you first saw it, it was actually an inverted C.
Yes. It was. If you can picture standing in front of the first big dip on a roller coaster, how they would come over the top and come down. And the arc happened because at first there was just one light, but they were so in unison, so closely followed each other. I didn't know there were more than the one until they went down into this. The first one was lower than the back one, so it was up a hill like that. It was kind of like an inverted C, is all I can kind of describe it like. And they just hovered in that position until one by one, making sure the coast was clear, they would come down and find their hiding spot and then them down. It was just utterly amazing. And each of the craft looked identical. They were all the same size. They all were very well lit in the front. Never could really make out the shape because the lights were blinding. And when they dimmed down, they were down on the over in the creek areas. I really could never get a make on how big they were. They weren't very big, though. They weren't very big. I could tell you that right now. They were like a Mini Cooper, if that. But shaped like a cigar or a cigarette pack, kind of squarish, longer than thickness, you know. And, you know, from that point on, I just always kept my eyes up. I'm still looking. I'm 67 years old, Nick, and I'm still looking. And when you see one, you want to see another one. It's an addicting thing. They're beautiful. I mean, it's really, they're just out of this world.
Still watching the skies.
I'm still watching the skies. I walk my dog at night. And I'm always looking up. I'm always looking up. Because you'll never see anything unless you look up. You have to look up.
That is true. Yeah, you ain't going to see nothing if you ain't looking.
You got to pay attention, too. I mean, you know, because sometimes these things, they kind of hide themselves. They kind of look like a star if you're not paying attention. But usually a little lower in the sky, maybe a little different color, you know, maybe a little movement, you know. They're always in a little bit of movement. That's what I've noticed about them, that little hover.
And also, you know, same as your very first encounter, you know, you had cloud cover. And it makes you wonder, you know, when we have a little bit of cloud cover, and especially here in the UK, which is pretty much all the time when it comes to the clouds, you don't know what's floating around up there.
Right.
Just above the clouds.
That thing just had the first sighting. It was close enough to the clouds that where it opened that hole up. I mean, I would never have seen it had it not created that little hole. And, you know, so up above that hole is where it sat. And I could see up around it. It was all black sky from, you know, once you got past the UFO. It was pretty large. That one was pretty large. It really was. And silent, not a sound. As a matter of fact, when the train, so to speak, came down and landed, I never heard a sound other than dogs barking. Every dog in the neighborhood knew something was going on. Dogs have that. They have a sixth sense that we don't have, I think.
Yeah, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, with your first sighting, you said it had a light that was going around.
Yes.
Say clockwise, going around clockwise.
Counterclockwise.
Counterclockwise. Okay.
When it got into that certain position, it kind of it leveled out, so to speak. You know, I couldn't see the top because it was up above me, but it was turning in a very slow counterclockwise motion and hit a little outside light on the edge of it. That's what made me see the turning. I could tell that light would go all the way around and come all the way back around and around again. Very slow. It wasn't like spinning fast. It was very slow, very methodical. And then when the laser beam started shooting out, that's when she and I just became unglued. We couldn't believe it. It was amazing. It was a light show. And it was really, really neat. Great experience. It made me realize, you know, I'm a Christian man, Nick, and I always was taught, you know, that you know, God made us in His image. And for a long time, I was confused. And then I realized one day that if God is the God of the universe, He's their God too. And it made me not fear them as much. I'm not afraid of them. You know, I almost feel like I can't wait. I hope I'm alive when they show themselves up close. I really do.
Yeah, I think regardless of what we hear in the future, you know, it's I don't think there will be any fear. they're probably not like us minds. They probably don't function the same way mentally we do as human beings, but they are going to be different.
Yep.
But then again, the same as human beings, you know, you got good and you got bad ones.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's evil in the world and there's good in the world. So, you know, it's hopefully the good will win out at the end.
That is true. Now, Dalton, you had a lot of experience, you know, in the U.S. Navy working on the fighter aircrafts and stuff.
Yep.
Have you ever seen anything like that while you were serving? I mean, anything that was more earthbound, more military based?
No. I worked in different airports, naval installations all over the, from Puerto Rico to Hawaii, Florida, California. And I spent many, many evenings out on a tractor pulling airplanes around on airports and runways. And we watched the night sky a lot because we're waiting for our airplanes to return to recover them. And aircraft carriers floating over to Hawaii on the USS Kitty Hawk. I've never seen anything in the night sky that even resembled jet blast, and it's completely different thing when you see an airplane. In 1986, the way this the first craft flew away was just beyond belief. How fast! I mean, as fast as you can blink an eye, it went from this to that. I was like, whoa! And it came back the same way, and it was just a really, really beautiful thing to look at. When you're looking at it, though, when you're watching and it's real time, you can't wrap around it. It's just beyond, it's just beyond what you've come accustomed to. You're trying to make sense of something that you can't make sense of. That's the only way I can describe it. But it was really a great experience. I'm glad it happened to me. I'm hoping it happens to me again. I really do.
It's something you never forget.
That's right. It's burnt in your brain. I mean, Nick, this happened in 86 and 88, and it's like I just saw it. Telling you the story all over again, it's just been I thought about it during the day. I thought, how am I going to tell my story to Nick would make sense? And you assure me that just be yourself, man. And then, you know what? That's what I'm doing. I'm just being me. And it's forever etched. It will never leave me, And there are people who think you're crazy. And you know what? That's okay. They have a right to think that. I know what I saw, and no one can take that away from you. My eyes didn't lie to me. I know what I saw. So, but I'm happy to have shared this story, and I hope the people are interested in it, because I'm listening to everybody else's. I love their stories too. Keep bringing them in, folks. Let's hear all of them.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming.
That's wonderful, Dalton. You did great.
Did I?
You're a natural.
No, I'm not.
You sure are.
I'm a storyteller. Nick, when I go to bed at night, I'll get in there and I'll turn you on first. I always go right to you first. And if you're doing it now, you're doing Throwback Thursdays, whatever. I listen to those too, if you don't have anything current, if you're not on that day, I know it's Sunday nights. Usually it seems like a new one pops up. I'll go over to something else like Conflict Radio, or I'm just totally interested and think it's a really, really interesting subject, like I said, my wife could care less. So that's kind of my own little thing.
Yeah, your wife and my wife get along pretty well.
Well, when you come to Florida, bring her, man. I'd love to take you out to dinner. I really would, Nick.
Yeah, like I said, if I'm in that area, I will take you up on it.
Fort Myers, your brother's here. If nothing else, I'll meet you at a pub someplace just to clink a cold one together. I love your podcast. I'm always going to listen to them. I hope it never goes away.
Good stuff.
Nick, when you lead in, when the podcast first starts, and then he goes, we got four calls over Liberty. We got, and the cops are running around Liberty. I know right where that's at. That's Liberty, Ohio. And I remember that happening up in Liberty. It's on your introduction to leading into you
that's
talking
right.
to your guest. Liberty, see, I lived in Cincinnati area for the last about 20 years before I moved to Fort Myers. I retired up in Cincinnati. And I used to ride my bike over to Liberty all the time. So when I hear that, I always go, I know right where that's at. That's Liberty, Ohio.
In fact, the actual woman in the call center, I know someone that was friends with her. Has actually never guessed that she knows her. So just reminded me about that. Actually, I've been meaning to get her to come on. And so,
I remember that whole episode happening, Hey, Nick, I tell you what, man, I love talking to you. I could talk to you for days, man. I mean, you're a really nice person, man. I always knew it, but you're kind and you're calm and you're smart, and I appreciate you, man. I really do.
You know, I get messages from other podcasts asking me how to be with people, and I say to them, I goes, well, don't try and be anything. Just, you know, just be yourself, because all this is natural. This is just who I am. This is how I don't. This I'm not even trying.
Well, you know, I noticed very early on that when you have a guest on and they're on the podcast, you kind of disappear for a while and let them just tell the story. And I like that. It's not a whole lot of interruption by the host, you know. And I felt myself as I was talking tonight. I thought, I hope Nick doesn't think I'm over talking. I'm just going to tell it like I know it. So
it was my intention, Dalton, is because I'd listened to radio shows and other podcasts where the host would be constantly talking, usually about themselves or, you know, what they've been eating or garlic bread or whatever. And it would just annoy me. The host wouldn't let the guest tell what happened to them.
Exactly.
This is purely why I do it this way. But people get so much pleasure listening to the guest. You know, they don't want to listen to the host. It's not the Nick Hunter show, you know. If it was, then it may be different. But it's the guest people want to listen to. And that's what brings people listening every week.
Well, you're my favorite. And you always have been, man. So I loved when I first heard your show. I mean, I listened to every one of them, man. Every single one of them. I love the guy floating over on the boat, you know, him and his buddy. You know, that whole thing was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
So many great podcasts that you put out. They're amazing.
Yeah, that was Neb.
I love that one.
Dalton, I really appreciate you for coming on, sharing it all for our listeners today.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
That's my pleasure.
Have a great holiday.
Yep, and you too.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Good night.
Take care of yourself, sir.
Bye-bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of high strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Ian, and welcome to the show.
Good evening, Nick.
It is great to have you on today, calling from North Ayrshire, Scotland.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, Ian, your experiences take us back to 1950. Would you like to start there for us, please, Ian?
Yes, it was actually slightly after 1950. I was born in 1953 in Glasgow. And since my early days of as far back as I can remember, there have been a number of strange incidents that have occurred during my life. And the first one I can remember, as whenever people start having memories, was lying in bed in a flat in Glasgow and seeing what I perceived to be a number of faces staring into my room from the window. But looking back on it now, from my perspective, is it could have been something similar to whether you think we live in a three-dimensional, two-dimensional or world, or whether there's actually sort of like multi-universes existing at the same time. Now, these faces, I did sort of like get frightened when I saw them, and they happened quite a few times. Now, from that time on, I've had a number of strange occurrences, mainly, I suppose, feeling slightly as if there were abductions. The first one I remember sort of clearly was being removed from where I was in Glasgow, the bedroom in Glasgow, by a group of small individuals. Perhaps at the time I saw them as small hooded individuals, but in actual fact, we seemed to be in a woodland in another time and another place. And they were taking me to a particular place. Then I remember I was back in my bedroom and screaming, and my mother coming into the room, and I told her what had occurred. And of course, she thought I'd been dreaming and explained it away that way. Another group of individuals that I seem to have experience of were, strangely enough, a group of ladies, and they were strange ladies. And they described themselves and their names as bitten ladies. And they sort of had two or three occasions when they sort of took me again to somewhere which was not where I was, and again returning me back while I was sort of still very frightened and screaming, and again explained to my mother what had happened, and again I'd been dreaming, which I hadn't been, because I was quite conscious and knew exactly what had happened. We had to move in the 1960s to a place not so far from where we lived in Kelso Street, which was in Yoker, to a place called Drumchapel. One particular evening, I'd been in bed, and I wasn't very old at the time. I thought I'd be about 9 years old, I should imagine. I think it was about 1962. And lying in bed, I found myself surrounded by a extremely bright light. In fact, it was almost blinding, the light. And in my memory, I began to scream. Felt as if a period of time had passed, and I was now, from wherever I'd been, back in my room, surrounded by this bright light. Again, lots of screaming. The whole family burst into the bedroom. I explained the situation. Again, I suppose not really explained away as dreaming, but imagination is probably the best way that they would explain it. Now, I think it was fairly quiet from that time on, apart from the time when I was living in a place called Potton, in a house, Epperstone House, which was an old bakehouse back to about the 18th century. There was quite a number of strange incidents that happened in that particular house, where rooms would change and furniture would change within that, and voices were heard. And not only me this time, but actually one or two of my brothers and my mother had a strange experience, or separate experiences, in that property. So when I went on, when I left school, to work in a leather manufacturing job, where I was working in Hitchin, where there was a setting out machine. Now, leather, when it's sold and bought, it's done by area. And the machine I was working at the time was called a setting out machine, which had two rollers and a helically shaped blade at the back, which actually spread the hides and skins into a larger area. And on one particular day, I was just quite happily working away and putting the finished articles onto a horse ready for the next process, when I saw a ball of light emerge from a wall at the end of the tannery. It seemed to be floating around that particular area where I was working, and it seemed to be, although it, whether you would believe it was alive or not, would be hard to say. It seemed to be have some, it was either in control of itself or something was in control of it, because it seemed to be looking or searching for something. And it did this for, I suppose, between 5 and 10 minutes, and then returned to the wall and the area of the wall that it originated from, and then just disappeared back into the wall. Now, the next incident happened in about 1973, I lived at that time in Potton, which is in Bedfordshire, and I'd been sharing the evening with a friend, listening to music. We were listening to, as I recall, the Beatles, and it was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Now, after that record had finished, it was time for me to go home. Now, as I left, the news was just starting. At that time, it started at 9 o'clock. And so I knew what time it was I left. I left at 9 o'clock that particular evening. And as I left, I lit up a cigarette. Now, the time to cover the distance from his place to mine's was about 10 minutes. And as I say, I just lit up a cigarette and was walking back home. And I was walking down a road or a street called King Street. And still smoking a cigarette, I looked around, and there's a place called the Church Causeway, which led from King Street up to St. Mary's Church. And it was dark, and which tells you what time of year it was. And as I walked past the Church Causeway, there were two people, ages I would say young, which would be, I suppose, between mid-20s and 30. One was a male, one was a female, and they were looking at me and smiling. And at that time, I just looked and thought it strange, but carried on walking. And they were giving sort of small laughter. And as I passed the co-op, which was in King Street, I stubbed out my cigarette and walked to the market square, which I could see probably about 30 yards before me, or maybe 40 yards. I looked up at the clock, and the clock said 12:15. Which was quite past midnight. So this, I suppose, you could say it left me feeling strange and what's happened here, you know, because it takes 10 minutes to smoke a cigarette, not 3.5 hours or whatever. So I got home and I tried to explain to my father what happened. And of course, he wasn't prepared to believe this. But anyway, that's actually what happened. Now then, moving on. But the same friend, and this was a little while later, we were out in my backyard, and it was a night. Now, I can't remember which lunar landing it was, but it was a night of a lunar landing, and we looked up at the moon just out of curiosity. As we looked up at the moon, both he and I saw what looked like one or two crafts come from behind the moon, and we did watch it. For quite a while, we went out and we sort of kept looking up, and we could see this craft or whatever it was still flying in the vicinity of the moon. And after a short while, maybe an hour or so, it returned not to where the moon had been, but now to where the moon was. So it actually moved from the back of the moon, from where it was, to the back of the moon again, to its now new location. Or the location it was in when this these one or two craft, I think it was more than one craft that returned to its position then. Later on, around about 1976, I was out for the day visiting a place called Wimpole Hall. I believe it's in Cambridgeshire. It's out that way anyway. And they've got a folly. And whilst I was up on this folly, seemed to be at the sort of like upper ridge, if not on the top of the ridge, on the way up to the top of the ridge, I looked across to an adjacent field and saw, I think it was three balls of light. Well, they were moving across the top of the crops, and to say that they were moving would be more accurate. You said they would seem to be like dancing in that field. And as I've said to one or two people I've explained to before, that a strange feeling or attitude comes over me, at least when I see these, I suppose, things, is that you feel as if there's nothing unusual in it. It's only them again, you know. It's a case like there were little things misbehaving. Well, anyway, that's the feeling that I experienced. Now, we move on probably to when I was in the Royal Navy. And this is a number of incidents that happened quite close together. in about 1978, we were in the area of the Bermuda Triangle and had been for about 3 months. On this particular night, we that were on the radar, I think it was a surface table at the time, picked up a contact on the radar that had been there for a while. We also had it held on a planned position indicator in the center, and it was definitely there, held on radar, but there was nothing on visual. And this contact remained with us for quite a while, quite a few days, actually. And this seemed to disturb most of us, especially the officers, which the thing is, a contact there that can't be described or explained under these circumstances can be a bit disconcerting for military forces. During that period of time, I was keeping myself very fit by doing a lot of training on the upper deck. And just before I went on duty, well, while I was doing the training, I saw what seemed like a wall of fog. Now, it wasn't like normal fog that drifts and is sort of like uneven and drifting edges. This was like a straight wall. It was almost like a solid straight wall. And it definitely was not like a normal sea fog or a har or anything like that. It was a very tall, high, straight wall. Later on, when I was on duty in the ops room as a radar plotter, we were in, when we would have been in that wall because we were heading straight for it, we were surrounded by, this is in the actual ops room itself, by an overpowering putrid smell described only what could be like rotten meat. Very, very, very pungent, rotten smell. And again, during that incident, it's a separate incident, but it sort of fits in with the previous two incidents. One of the officers that was on duty in the ops room had to be removed from the ops room, well, basically because he'd become unhinged. He wanted to, he thought he could get rid of it by wafting it away and using, air spray and things like that, which was totally ridiculous. The poor chap had actually lost it, so he was removed from the vicinity, the ops room. Once again, this was on the same, tour. Can't say too much about it, but because we have to be careful what we say when you're in the armed forces. Once again, later on, this was, maybe a week later, I was on the fog lookout and I saw out further out to sea a number of what were coloured balls, and they seemed to be accompanied by the sound of bells, but there wouldn't have been any bells out there because we were too far from shore. Well, we're out in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, so what you can make of that is sort of anyone's business. Later on, when I'd left the Navy, this was 1981, again, back in Porton, this time we were living in Berry Hill in a council house. I was walking down to my local for a relaxing drink, shall we say. And whilst walking down the hill, about 80 feet up, 80 feet in the air, quite a bit ahead of me, I saw what was an enormous, large ball of what seemed like a fiery orange, very bright ball that flew over my head. I say still about 80 feet, and it was roaring like it was, and it went over my head and went behind me towards, it'd be Wrestlingworth, which would be from, west. Yes, it'd be from west to east. Well, it was going straight above my head and it was resting with anyway. That feeling of, it's just them again, and not this feeling of any panic or surprise. It was a kind of like, as it gets closer to you, a kind of strange feeling is apparent anyway to me. And it's just like they're at it again. Yeah, it's just them again. So and once they're gone, you just sort of like shake your head and just carry on. So I just carried on to my location, the pub. This is 1976. Be about 1976. I was driving a lorry for the local authority, initially the Central Purchasing Department, and then on to the, I suppose you'd call it the stores, education, kind of like departments merged. But on this particular night, I dropped off my shotgun, for want of a better word, the young lad that was with us while I was doing the driving, he'd be with us to assist us in moving stuff on and off lorries into one place and another. And I dropped him off, and I was driving back from Bedford, Otton, because I think we had to start early the next day. But anyway, driving back, I was driving back, and I had a feeling of someone sitting beside me. It was a feeling of there was somebody there, and we were having a conversation, and I was talking to this person, whoever it was, certainly no one I knew or even thought was there, and was talking to them. And then all of a sudden, the person I was talking to just wasn't there anymore. I won't say that they dissolved into mist or whatever, but they just weren't there. Now then, this, again, round about the same time, a small lump was there in my neck. I can't remember, it was on the right-hand side. Yes, it was the right-hand side. And it was there for a while. And, I mean, not knowing what it was or heard of anything, I wasn't even sort of really interested in cancer or anything like that at the time, but it kind of like just disappeared all of a sudden. And it was there for quite a while, and then it was gone. Again, nothing very much happened till about 2009. And prior to that time, or just before that time, I was working as a custody officer in a immigration removal centre. And my mother became very ill and had two consecutive bouts of chest infection, so serious that I had to sort of give in my job to come up to Millport, which is in Ayrshire, North Ayrshire. It's an island just about a mile offshore where I'm actually currently residing. One night I was living, when I lived in Glasgow Street in Millport, I was out in the back garden with the cat and the dog, and I looked up to the sky. It was dark, and the sky was fairly dark with the usual sky, with stars and things. And as I looked into the sky, not expecting to see anything, there was nothing further from my mind, when I saw three shield-shaped objects. The only thing I'll explain them really is if you've ever looked at the things in Star Trek where they tap when they talk to somebody, it's a sort of logo, that V logo. It was similar to that. There was three of them, and of course, being up the size they were quite small, but they sort of came out of the darkness as if they'd just flown through a dark sheet, and they flew along for a while and then disappeared or merged again with the darkness. It was like they'd gone through into the darkness and disappeared. That was that. Well, there are a number of other things that have occurred, but how long must my list go on? So, Nick, I think that's as much as I can sort of like get from memory.
Ian, you did great.
Yes, thank you, Nick.
Wonderful. You had quite a lot of experiences there over the years.
Yeah, there are some more, Nick, but as I say, going over the years, it's hard to get them into chronological order and getting them right. That's why I had difficulty with that one at 1975 in the lorry. But I realised after that, it was after I'd left the Navy.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, trying to remember dates and stuff. And it's not like you were keeping record over the years, was it?
No, I wasn't, no.
Oh. Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Let's go back to the experiences that you had when you were younger.
Yeah.
You talk about the hooded figures.
Yeah.
Is there any details that you actually remember about them in particular?
The things I remember is the size and what appears. You know, when I was young, I thought they looked a bit like monks. But then again, you haven't got very much to relate to when you're younger. But no, I suppose they could have been wearing any number of garb. They just, at that time, seemed to be wearing hoods. I suppose they were wearing hoods and I suppose sort of kind of loose-fitting clothes. So, and they seem to be kind of like, well, it's a bit hard to tell just between a monk and something which is military, you know, and the whole get up seems to be very similar. So, and I seem to remember the place that we were in was a kind of like very green and very woody. So I'm not too sure if it was some alternative place we'd been to or some alternative time. But I was awake and I remember we were kind of like they were marshalling me somewhere, you know what I mean? They were small. They would say they were, I won't say midget, because they didn't have the midget sort of appearance or physique. They were just small. Normal shape, just small.
And do you have any recollection of actually seeing their faces?
Think of their faces. They could have been dark. Yes, I would say they were quite dark, but that might have been because of what I thought were hoods. You know, that they were just small, dark. They were marshalling me along through this sort of like, for want of a better word, you'd probably say a wooded glade, but I mean, that's kind of hard to say, really. But that's about as much as I can remember about it, except that I was awake and I think I was resisting quite a bit. I didn't really want to be going.
And you recall having experiences with them on several occasions?
I only seem to remember, if there were more than one occasion, there were very few. The most occasions I had were the things regarding the bitten ladies. There was quite a few occasions with them.
Bitten ladies in particular, how were they treating you?
Kind of like not very respectful. I would say in a slightly abusive way or manner or nature. But I was very young at the time. I was probably, well, I was under seven, definitely under seven. I suppose I could have been around about five. I'd say probably about five at the time.
And of course, it's difficult to try and remember details, especially that age.
Yeah.
There were many of them, more than one of these ladies.
Yeah, there was, I would say, round about between 7 and 10 of them.
And they actually called themselves the Bitten Ladies.
Yeah, that's where I got the name from. And when I mentioned it, when I got back away from what I consider them and back here, as it was, that was the name I used to describe them.
I don't know why, but it sounds, as soon as you mentioned it, it rang a bell. But I don't remember why, unusual.
Mm.
The environment that they took you to, was it the same as where the monks had you when they were interacting?
No. It was different. It was more bright. It was a brighter place. I wouldn't like to say what the countryside or what the background was like, but they were there. It was a very, well, kind of bright place. And they were, I would say, I'm trying to think what they looked like now. They were kind of like thinnish and dark-bodied. Yeah, they kind of like, they were very, I don't know, I'm not going to say witch-like, but they were just not very pleasant, if you know what I mean.
And their clothing?
The clothing was kind of, what do you say, no, I might say raggedy, but that might be inaccurate. I'll say it was loose clothing. close as I can get to it, thinking back. Loose clothing.
And their interactions, was it predominantly in the 60s? It was different times.
Yeah, it all happened round about that time. Yeah, I would say that. It certainly didn't go beyond the 60s. So, no, it was while I was living in Kelso Street, which is in Glasgow. It's in Yorker, part of Glasgow. And by that time, after that, I moved up to Drumchapel, which is where I had that incident in the bedroom where I was surrounded by pure white light.
Yeah, that's another interesting one. I'd like to say that your experience is unique, but they're actually quite common. You know, a lot of my guests on here talk about very similar things.
Yeah, as far as I know, Nick, I mean, you know, it tends to be certain people, not saying that everybody gets it, but there's enough people who've experienced the same thing. And I said later on that my brothers and mother had experienced something when we lived at Epperstone House in Porton. It was Bull Street in Porton. I have had the most exposure to this kind of phenomenon, shall we say. I mean, there was one night when my mother, God rest her, she was lying in bed one night and she saw this very large individual standing in the doorway to her room, and she was totally paralyzed. She could not move. I don't think anything very much happened to her. She couldn't scream or move or whatever. Now, I wouldn't even be sure whether that person was in there for her benefit, or perhaps might have been looking for me. That's just me adding a little bit of a story to it. But that's what happened to her. There was another occasion in that same house when I was lying in bed sharing the bedroom with my four brothers, because it was a very large room. My younger brother, Bill, he let out a scream, and my brothers were saying, "What are you screaming at?" And he said he'd seen me sit up in bed, but in actual fact, my body was lying on the bed, but he saw me sit up out of my body, as it were.
You know, so you haven't been just the only one to experience things. There's been multiple or various different members of the family.
Yeah, but only on very short occasion. I mean, I've got another brother who totally poo-poos it, and I wouldn't say he's in denial. He just won't accept that these phenomena happen. But, you know, my mother, who's dead now, experienced that situation with the large person in the doorway coming in from the hall. And my brother Bill, that was the only, as I'm aware of, experience that he had. He may have had more. I think he may have said he heard something about hearing voices. One, I hear voices quite a bit. I don't hear voices. It's a kind of I've got this strange feeling that there are visitations between one of the multi alternative universes that actually do cross over certain, I suppose, frequencies. But that's just my feeling.
You know, I mean, I do cover a lot of experiences on this show, various from UFOs and the paranormal, even some cryptids like Bigfoots, all that kind of thing. The reason why is because I do believe, you know, there is a lot of connections in between the different types of experiences.
Yeah, with me, the realms of fantasy here, but I've got a feeling that sometimes certain ideas and thought processes and that actually come to me from somewhere else. And that's involving physics, understanding, philosophies, and that I can feel that they come and give me some kind of understanding, which I've never really been educated in, because although I've had that many jobs, everything apart from science and brain surgery, I seem to have had every sort of job under the sun, and I've really only had an education which wasn't that brilliant, because when I was at secondary school, even since my early ages and up until now, I suffered from dyslexia. So academic study was something that was always a struggle to me. So I've always had to try and, I suppose, get education from experience rather than from books.
And you know, you're the first person I've spoke to that have actually been within the Bermuda Triangle as well.
Yeah, I spent at least 3 months in there. Yeah, it was a very strange place. You might watch about it on the television and wonder whether it's true or whether it isn't, and can that really be the case? Would these things happen? Well, from my experience, it is a very bizarre place. It affects compasses, it affects just about everything. I mean, you can't really describe. It's like another world, really. And I mean, I don't know. Only you go further down to the Sargasso Sea, and there's another peculiar place.
I remember having a book by Charles Blitz many, many years ago, and his book of about the Bermuda Triangle, hearing about these walls of fog.
Yeah. Oh, that was weird.
Were they the same? Were they just normal fog colour?
Yeah, it was like a normal grey colour. But if you can see, I don't know, I mean, I've got next to me a filing cabinet. It's a nice, smooth wooden filing cabinet. And the wall was this, it looked, I mean, I know, never felt it, run my hand up against it, but it looked as flat as a wall. I mean, it's almost as if there was something pushing against it, keeping it, you know, because mists and fog move and they're sort of like not regular shape. Like a low cloud, really, and but this was a sheer wall, and it was as flat and as smooth as any wall you could imagine, really, and it went up so high. Well, it went up so high I couldn't see the sky. That there's my point coming out. I mean, so it went up so high, and it was stationary. As I explained to my brother, because he writes poetry as well, but he sits down and creates and sort of shapes it, manages it, and this. Whereas my poems tend to come just out of nowhere. It's like automatic writing. It seems to come from something, although it's coming from within me or something I'm watching. I'll just watch something, whether it's something in the outside, something that's happened, or whether it's something on the television. It just tends to, and I very rarely, if ever, alter it, you know, because some people say, well, I'll do this and I'll do that, and this seems to just like flow without any those prior management, if you know
what
I mean.
And it feels like outside influence.
Yeah, it does. It feels as if it's coming from somewhere else, and although it's something I may well have seen or so, it's almost like, I mean, I have some very strange ideas. I don't know if you want to do another interview, but I've got ideas in my head which are really bizarre. And I think that we are in kind of like walking around in meat suits and a bit like radios and programs on the television and that. There's, you know, this sort of the influences that come through us as people who might be considered as spirits and that are actually coming into our beings from elsewhere. Another way of putting it is, you may have heard this theory before, but it's one that I picked up even before I heard the theory, because once I heard the theory, I thought, yeah, that's what I think. It's a case of time and people seeing things that aren't there. It's a bit like, do you remember the old radio that had a knob on it? You turned it and you could sometimes get two stations happening at the same time.
I sure do.
One would merge with the other, you know, and you get bits coming through from another station. You know, the long wave meets the short wave and all that sort of thing. And, well, I think that sometimes happens, our existence here. And I think that sometimes everything's on a frequency. Everything in the universe, as far as I'm concerned, is a frequency. The reason that they've got a solidness to it is because they exist and vibrate in different frequencies. And one can't go through the other because of the different frequency. And if you could alter the frequency of one, you could actually blend it with the other or even put it through. My theories can go a lot deeper than that. I mean, it would certainly take a good long time for you to listen to my weird, bizarre, carry-ons and thoughts.
You know, many people have said, you know, they always felt their ideas, their inventions, you know, their equations all came from somewhere else. Like Einstein used to say the same thing. Tesla,
yeah.
he was in belief of the same.
Yeah, I've heard that, but haven't heard those things. These are things that I had established in my own thought patterns. And it was nice for me to think, well, it's not just me, you know, because you start to think that maybe you're weird, or maybe there's something strange or bizarre about you. But when you start to realize that, you know, there are other, people with similar experiences, you start thinking, well, maybe there's something in it, or maybe you're not as mad as you thought you were. I've theories about time travel and seeing. There was also one particular thing which I never mentioned during the speaking, was one time when I was walking from where I lived in Porton to Sandy, because I had some friends about 4 miles away, and I used to walk there sometimes for a night out. In one particular evening, I been lifted up into the sky, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what the time difference was between this being lifted up into the sky and then returning back down again. I don't know how long that period was, but it was a feeling, sensation that happened one particular night whilst walking to Sandy. It was a nice starry night, as I recall.
You said when you would see these objects, there was a kind of an acceptance already where, you know, it's just them again.
Yeah, it is just them again. And there's also a feeling I've had for many years. There's some kind of transference or part transference between me and someone else from somewhere else. It's almost like part of me is just here for a little while, sharing a particular existence. That's how it feels. Like or similar people out there to myself, I don't feel so, isolated.
You're not isolated. And
in actual fact, where I live, Nick, has been reported and has been in the main press. It's actually a sort of like a UFO highway. There's been ever so much, we call it UFOs or whatever they call the modern name for it. But, you know, unidentified flying objects have been seen a lot around here. And there's quite a lot to and fro, apparently.
But yeah, you're right. You know, there are hotspots all over the UK. In Wales, you know, you've got South Wales, and the same up in Scotland.
It's true. There are more people out there that have seen things. Now, the balls of light I was talking to someone in the British Legion Club in Millport, being ex-service. I used to frequent it now and again. And I met a chap in there who, his idea of these balls of light is they're more to do with ghosts than spirits. Well, who am I to say they are or they aren't? But he's obviously experienced them as well. And I think he's part of a group that's to do with, ghosts, for want of a better word.
You know, you've got some part of people which are involved with UFOs. They're very nuts and bolts. You know, it's basically they're a solid form. So they kind of discount these orbs side of things, the whole consciousness and all that kind of stuff. And to be honest, you can't, you know, you cannot dismiss. You have to kind of look at as a whole. You can't just pick and choose what you think's credible.
That's right. Know? I couldn't agree more. But I'll say what I was going to say was there is definitely, in my experience, a lot out there that is going on. I can't rightly say what it is. Whether my ideas or my imagined ideas, but the experiences I've had, which are, as far as I'm concerned, real, but to explain what they are is so diverse, because I think we only experience a little bit of the universes or the existence that we experience, or explain it in that way. But I think there's far more outside our range of understanding and physical and psychological experience. There's just so many things that we experience that are unexplainable, that there has to be more than we know.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of in a way it's exciting also, you know. It's exciting
and frightening at times.
It is, yeah. I don't know what would be more frightening, knowing we're alone or knowing we're not alone.
Let's put it this way. In my belief, because belief is not knowing. I mean, knowing is evidence, complete understanding of what's happening. But in my belief, from what I've experienced, there are far more variables in this existence that we can be aware of or understand. And I think probably it's nice to go out there and look for them and look for the answers. How and when we'll ever know these answers, I don't know, but it's not an excuse for not looking.
I agree with you. I mean, when I was growing up in the early 80s, you know, seeing all the Spielberg movies and thinking just, you know, probably won't be very long, we find out the truth. But, you know, that time gets longer and longer. But it's the searching.
You see glimpses sometimes on the media and on films, and people who write, well, say the people who are creators, the people who write things, it's almost as if you look at them and think, well, somebody knows something. You never thought about something, or you might have questioned something. All of a sudden, well, that makes sense, you know. And some people do have, I don't know, it's understanding or a gateway into the something which has been, until now, unexplainable. And that's basically what it is. Until now, we see things that we can't explain, but it doesn't stop them being there. And the fact that they are there begs an explanation.
I agree.
I'm convinced, and I said to my brother, who's denying of the whole thing about me seeing these things, and I believe I've been abducted, but he won't have it.
You know, there's a good chance that if you were, then he probably was. So you probably want to say that to him.
Well, I have said similar things to him, but whether he's at this denial takes the nature or the form of running away from it, or just, you know, because some people, you know, they'll go, no, because it's so far out of their, bit like Jonathan Cleese, you know, when he was acting up in Fawlty Towers, something occurred, and because of the way his mind was constructed, he just couldn't accept, although it was there, and it was obvious, he just couldn't accept it. But that kind of complete denial of something which is staring you right in the face, but you can't accept its reality, because for to do so would mean that everything that you knew or thought you knew or had been taught to think would bring your whole idea and your whole world crashing around you, which would probably lead to some kind of mental breakdown.
The good thing now is these days, you know, you can kind of bring up the whole, you know, the publicity that's coming out now with the US Navy and everything which is in the news and which is going through Congress and all that. So it's not just fantasy anymore, you know, it's not just Arthur C. Clarke on the TV, it's going places, you know.
Yeah, I mean, my earlier experiences, they happened and very few people walked around with cameras, never mind mobile phones on them. And there were very few people then had even sort of like video recorders in that. So I think now there's probably more things coming to light now than there was in the past. Although I have seen one or two things that have annoyed me on the internet, where the actual things that are actually being posted are so obviously fake that it almost like rubbishes the whole subject. Now, whether that's people trying to get some kind of kudos, or whether it's some people trying to sort of poo-poo the whole subject and take its seriousness away. I'm ex-military, Royal Navy. When these things were happening in the Bermuda Triangle, especially the bit where the contact was being followed on radar, but there was nothing on visual because everyone was up on the bridge trying to locate this thing visually, and there was nothing, but it was definitely there, and we were supposed to talk about it. Now, I will never talk about anything which would endanger Britain's security in any way whatsoever, shape or form, but I'm quite sure that I am going to talk about this incident because it happened, and it was there. We were there for a particular reason, but this contact was there, and it was there for days. I can't remember how many days it was there for, but it was there for days. Because I would come back on watch, and it was still there, and we'd say, is it still there? Is it still there? Yeah, it was still there. And there was a lot of nervous people, especially the ones that have scrambled egg on their hats and coats, you know, the officers. there's stuff that they hate, that then there's been something there that they can't explain or describe.
Was it ever concerning for yourself or your other crewmates, the general location where you were?
I would say that as far as I was concerned, there was obviously a little bit of concern as to what is it, but I think my overriding concern was, I suppose, curiosity, or what could it be? And I think a lot of my shipmates, especially in the op room, because they were the ones that were experiencing this object. Now, we were told we weren't supposed to talk about it and blah, blah, blah. But as far as I'm concerned, I've talked about it enough in the past, and I've talked about it because it was there and it happened. And I wasn't the only one that saw it. Everyone who was in the op room saw it. All the officers knew it was there. And, you know.
I think when it comes to military individuals, you know, and as long as they don't speak about what they were doing on the tour. I mean, obviously, the Bermuda Triangle, it's a very wide area, you know, and you're not talking about ships and stuff, you know, but they didn't make you sign anything. They didn't say to you, you can't talk about it, sign here.
No, no, we were just told verbally not to talk about it. It was, I suppose, really, there wasn't really very much they could do about it, to be honest. I mean, the thing is, I left the Navy back in, what was it, 1979? It was a long time ago, and I suppose these things have been going on since then. It's certainly been happening. A lot of people have seen them. And, of course, I've always been the sort of person who can only go with what I've experienced, what I suppose, know to be true. I mean, I don't see any point in me making up all these things that have happened, because what's the point? They happened, and I suppose really on occasions they've been slightly disturbing. Not so much the ones with the spaceships, and I don't know why that is. Or the things what we can consider as UFOs, or things that fly around up in the sky and we don't know what they is. But there've been one or two other incidents that have been a little bit more disturbing, like that incident where I lost for 3 hours. I mean, that was bizarre. And, you know, it's a bit hard to think, well, there's 3 hours of my life just gone. Where have they gone, and what happened while I was gone, and all the rest? I mean, sometimes I'll bump into complete strangers and they'll talk to me as if they know me. And I'll talk to them while I'm talking to them as if I know them, like they're all friends and I haven't seen them for a while. And then all of a sudden, when they're gone, the whole thing just, there's nothing there. It's like what just happened, you know? Who was that? But while you're actually meeting them, it's like they'd come up to you for some kind of like situation report. You know, what have you got to tell us, and what's this and what's that? And then all of a sudden they're gone, and so is the great connection between who they were. And they're complete strangers. You've never met them before.
They're unusual encounters, aren't they? You know, when you were talking about the missing time loss, you passed those two and they smiled at you.
Yeah, there was a man and a woman, and they were standing at the entrance to the church causeway. They looked over at me. They were smiling, and I sort of heard the sort of laughing. And it wasn't such a big ha-ha, jaffaw, you know, and all the rest of it. It was a kind of like, it's like they knew something I didn't know. That's the sort of, you know, sort of laughter, I know something you don't know. That kind of laughter.
And then 3 hours later, you finally returned to your destination.
Well, I don't remember going away. I just walked from the church causeway, walked up to where the co-op was, stubbed out the cigarette on the ground, carried on walking, looked up at the clock, and it was 12:15. It wasn't as if I felt that I'd been lifted on that occasion from one place, lost time, and all of a sudden I was back again. It was like it was a stream of consciousness and time had continued, but for some reason it had continued outside the reality of what we would consider as this universe, or this time continuum. Is that the right word? Yeah, you get the space-time continuum, and it's like somehow there'd been a bend in the river, you know. The river had bent in one way. Like I'd left the bank, the river of time had gone around that way, and I joined it further along the river. There'd be like a bend somewhere, and I'd stepped off the bank and picked up the river again further on, or the stream of time further on. That's about the only way I can explain it.
Yeah, so I had a guest on a while ago in America. Now, when he was at college, he was visiting his girlfriend, and it had been snowing. Mm-hmm. So he was just leaving her apartment, and he said he'd call as soon as he gets back. Now, this journey, he said it would take him 30 minutes, but it was snowing.
Mm.
And he left, and he doesn't remember. He remembers leaving, but the next thing he remembers being home. All right, so then he called his girlfriend to say, I've just arrived home. And she said, what are you talking about? You only left 5 minutes ago.
Mm.
So a journey which should have taken him on a normal day 30 minutes, but it was snowing, so it would have taken him a lot longer. He was there in 5 minutes. Very strange.
Yeah. I mean, most people, I think, believe that time is a constant. In my experience, it isn't. As I say, each individual, as I see it, individuals, their own time. I don't actually see time as a moving thing or outside. The time exists, as far as I'm aware, in my experience, it's the only thing that exists is now. And we've all got our own separate nows. A now for one person may be close to me, and we're existing in a now. But when we move out of each other's space of time, that it then changes, and you pick up a piece of time somewhere else. It's like time exists now, and it's all around it. Well, it's always existed, and it always will exist, but that always has and always will be in the future. It's just one anyway. It's a kind of, I explained to someone just recently, like if you look into what we see, perceive as the future, we think we're looking into the future, but we're not. We can see if we have little bits in between where we are and where we're looking, and light hitting one particular thing, and you can perceive a lot of things at the same time, something further away, brain experience them at the same time. But in actual fact, the things that we're seeing in the immediate future and the future further away, what we're actually doing is seeing the past now, but we think it's the future because you're moving towards it. Now, if you're moving from where you are now as a stationary person towards the future, what you're actually doing, if you believe in the stream of time and the existence of time, you're actually walking, as you think into the future, you're actually walking into the past because you're looking at something that you've already seen and you're walking towards that past. And very often, if you think you're leaving the past behind you, in actual fact, it's hard to explain in the short period of time that we've got here the intricacies and the complexities of what I'm trying to describe. We think time is a constant. It's not moving from one place to another at a constant speed, because time isn't constant. It changes. It can move. Time moves around from one place to another. Let's say when I was walking along King Street, that stream of time, if it was a river, it'd gone on a bend, and I picked up that stream further on, although that was in the future. But that future could be seen as not a real future. So what happened to that past before I got to that particular part of the bank of the river again?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. One thing I do know for sure is that the older I get, the music gets worse. Terrible.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Ian, I really appreciate you for coming on and sharing that for our listeners today.
Well, thank you, Nick. It was nice to chat to you. Right. Thank you very much,
no
Nick.
No problem. You take care of yourself. All right, Ian.
And yourself, Nick. Have a good evening.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Dalton and Ian for sharing tonight. And as always, thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.